siendo amor.
Blind Lemon Jefferson and the Matchbox Blues. And he's really one of the fountainheads of blues, of really of American popular music early in the 20th century. And he's being celebrated. He's being remembered in Lonesome Blues. It's a new show. It's at the York Theater through July 1st. And I'm going to be talking with the authors, Alan Governor, and the star playing Blind Lemon is Akin Babatunde. And this show you've been working on forever, right?
We keep discovering something new about Blind Lemon.
Plus, it's just been a big show down to now it's a one-man show. And in a way, I can't imagine it being any more effective than it is as it is right now.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
But who can tell the story better than himself?
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, and that's what, in the show, we delve deeper into the psyche of Blind Lemon. It's not just about the music. It's poetic, it's poignant.
He's, in effect, reminiscing or remembering on the last day, right?
Yeah, it actually takes place on the day he expired, the day he died, which there is a lot of mystery behind that. It's known that he froze to death in the cold up in Chicago, but there are so many other theories. So Al and I took it from the standpoint on the day of his death. And, you know, there's always this saying that when the moment you die, supposedly your life flashes before you. So in a poetic sense, his life is flashing before him, and he's taking inventory of if his living is in vain before he decides he's ready now.
He's ready now to go.
Yeah, yeah.
But because of that fact, the show is not completely linear. It's associations that he makes. There's triggers of things that he hears. In some sense, it mirrors the stages of someone dying, freezing to death. There's some hallucinatory element to it. There's an element of depression, reflection, thinking about loneliness, his disability.
Anger. Blindness. I felt anger a lot in the show, I thought.
There is anger, frustration.
Yeah, and though that is apparent, but there's also joy and celebration. So we don't want people to think they're coming to a heavy, kind of depressing show. It's not at all.
Lemon was not known for singing songs that lamented how wretched his life was.
Right.
He doesn't sing those songs. He was born blind, but he walked around and was told. I was reading about that. He walked around without anybody helping him. He got around on his own. Then after a while, when he became successful, as it were, he got a car and he had a chauffeur. And the story was he was found frozen in his car. That's one legend, right?
Yeah.
It was written in the paper, though, that he was found on the street near the train station. He was apparently, you know, abandoned by his chauffeur, who was, you know, a gambler and someone he knew well. But it's Blind Lemon at the height of his success. It defies a certain stereotype of what we think of as the blues singer. Blind Lemon was a star in his day.
He was the first man.
First country blues singer.
Well, I mean, it was women up until then.
Yeah,
it was
Bessie Smith.
And Mamie Smith and Ma Rainey. And
absolutely.
And then along comes Lemon and showing a whole different way of singing, not just as a man singing, but a whole different style of singing.
Truly. And his singing is, you know, legendary. And the records are, in a sense, a shadow of who the man must have been.
Yeah.
If you think about him standing in Dallas, Texas, in that area called Deep Ellum, which was at the threshold between the white and black worlds, that he had this big booming voice. And so in creating the show, we needed to create something that was a metaphor of that man. So it's not a literal representation of who Blind Lemon was. It's not a literal representation of those records. It's a deep interpretation. And Akin just personalizes it. He takes ownership of this role. He becomes Blind Lemon.
I appreciate that. And it is. It is a aesthetic and a spiritual interpretation. There are some evenings where my director said, At the end of the show, in one of the moments of the show, that she actually saw Blind Lemon on stage. I said, oh, my God. She said, no, his spirit felt really present in you.
Let's hear a little bit of Akin Babatunde as Blind Lemon Jefferson.
Blind Lemon, take three.
Broken, hungry, hungry, hungry. Broken, hungry, hungry, hungry. Broken, hungry, ragged and dirty tears. Broken, hungry, ragged and dirty tears. If I clean up, sweep my mind, can I come home with you? Mother, father, sister, brotherless tears. Yes, I'm of the father, sister, brotherless teal. I really want to be right at home with you. Are we through yet? Up in these daggone studios in Chicago.
Hey, you're listening to The Blues Break, and I'm joined by Alan Governor and Akin Babatunde. And they're very much involved, having written, and Akin is performing as Blind Lemon Jefferson in Lonesome Blues. Is at the York Theater now through July 1st. And listening to that song, you could hear fragments of at least four songs that other people have taken credit for. Mama, He Treats Your Daughter Mean, Broken Hungry, Junior Wells. That was a hit for Junior Wells, and one after another. Matchbox Blues is often credited to whoever is singing it. And that was the weird thing about the blues history when you're looking back at it. Even Lemon's friends would sing Lemon songs, change the title, and claim the songs as their own. Mm. But he was so much the original that we don't remember enough, which is what your show is about, remembering how important, what a fountainhead Blind Lemon was.
Truly. He was a wellspring. He was an heir to that musical tradition of Deep East Texas. Deep East Texas is so often not understood as being a real crucible of where the blues began. Everything has been written about blues has been so Mississippi-centric. I think with this show, it helps to return blues to its true origins.
I'm sure there are people who will argue that what are the true origins? Even if you go around Texas, there are people who say, well, no, the real Texas blues is down around Port Arthur. You know, you know, I mean, and no, you got to go across the border over into Louisiana.
But the real Texas blues is existing in everything. Like he influenced all kind of music. I was shocked when I found out that the Beatles were a kind of fan of his and did Matchbox Blues.
Yeah.
So it's always existing without us even knowing it, which is always surprising to me.
There was an early Western swing band, Roy Newman and his boys, that covered Matchbox Blues as early as the early 1930s. In writing about blues, I've done a number of books on the subject. What was remarkable about this area where Blind Lemon was from, that when the Freedmen's Bureau registered newly freed African Americans after slavery to vote in 1867, more than 200 individuals, when asked their place of birth, said Africa. So there's a lot of Blind Lemon that's a direct heir, not so much to the African experience, but to those African sounds. There were those homemade banjos. A lot of the Blind Lemon tunings are open G, which are banjo tunings. And these are the influences of African music and other songsters of his day. I don't mean to suggest that, you know, it originates as a music in that area of Texas. Obviously, blues originates in the African-American diaspora of the American South. It's that music of newly freed African-Americans having a chance to reflect, have the leisure to put their lives in perspective through their music, their hardships, their joys, their suffering.
And what you're doing, Akin, is in a way, what Lemon was doing with the music, which was creating the music as an art form as opposed to just for dancing.
Yes.
Because you can't dance to a lot of Lemon's records. He doesn't keep time in the same way.
Mm.
He doesn't do that four on the floor kind of thing. You know where one is, so you can do your twist around. No, he shifts in. Mance Liscombe said he couldn't keep time. He said, no, he's just going all different directions.
Yeah.
And that was fascinating.
That's a great point, that he breaks time.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to be imitated. He wants to be virtuosic. He is an artist. That's an excellent point that so many people miss. And I think Akeen brings that artistry in his interpretation of the music.
How were you able, Akeen, to work it out with the guitarist, David, in the show, who's wonderful, who can do all kinds of things, but how do you create in two people what one person did interdependently with himself? You know, he was playing the guitar and singing, and he could go anywhere when he wanted with the guitar, but you can't, David can't just go anywhere he wants because he's got to connect with you.
Right.
So how do you connect that? How do you recreate that feeling, really, of Lemon musically?
Well, you know, we've had a long process with the development of the show. And musically, we've had a long process as well. One of our original guitar players was Sam Swank. Yarbrough and Peoples was in one of our productions. And so we've consistently been evolving and growing. And when this opportunity for it to become a one-man show came upon me, it was in my lap to revisit and to interpret all of that we had learned from dealing with this particular creation. So you need a special person like David. And I don't play an instrument. I was playing a trombone when I was in high school. I went to high school of fashion industries. And the teacher hit my hand so much that I got scared to play an instrument. But I'm musical. I hear the sounds. I was brought up in the Baptist church, and I remember the moans and wails of the Mona's Bench. There's something called the Mona's Bench. So when I first was introduced to this music, I'm a child of the 60s. I grew up on Motown, so when I first heard it, it was old-fashioned music to me. So I've come to appreciate this aspect of my culture. And because it's in my DNA, it comes out of me in a spiritual way. So I hear the sounds. I hear the interpretations, and I hear the connection, and that's what's happening with David and I. We go every night. It is in the same genre, but spiritually, it connects somewhere different, depending on where we're at.
It's like there's that breathtaking moment in the West End Blues of Louis Armstrong when he plays that opening cadenza. Nobody ever played like that before.
Right.
Nobody ever played a piece of music like that ever before.
Yeah.
It just went every which way. It didn't have a 1-2-3, 1-2-3. No. And Lemon's songs are very often like that.
That's right.
They go where they go, where he wants them to go.
Yeah.
And people enjoyed that. I was reading that people would stand around his corner. There's a wonderful point in the show where he's arguing with a guy about, you're on my corner.
Huh.
But people stood around, and he appealed to all these people in Dallas, white people, black people, poor people, rich people. It was an amazing kind of appeal of Lemon back then.
Yeah.
Well, that person on that corner was Blind Willie Johnson, who himself was a giant in the history of this music.
But who was Blind Willie Johnson? He was considered the church singer, you know, gospels and things of that nature. And there's been a conflict in the African-American community, an ongoing conflict between secular and religious music. And because Blind Lemon can do both, sometimes it was, and it's a term called the devil's music.
Yeah.
But Blind Lemon was also a religious singer. There are two of his recordings are in this song, in the show.
Yeah.
He sang about, you know, he rose. That's one of his most rhythmic songs. One of his most danceable songs, actually, is the one about he rose from the dead. And, you know, you can feel the groove in that
oh,
song.
Wow.
But you know, and then the meantime, and then he'll, you know, then he'll turn around and he sang about, you know, the squeaking mattress blues.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
He sang in one of his songs about how many women were in his life and where they were in Dallas.
And mosquito blues.
Yeah.
Something about yo-yo blues. I mean, every aspect of life he seemingly addressed.
Let's listen to, here's Akeem again, he's a little moment from the show, and he's doing the rabbit foot, singing about the rabbit's foot, which is not very lucky for the rabbit. That's always a twist in that song, right?
One, two, what you gonna do? Blues jumped the rabbit and ran it one solid mile. Said blues jumped the rabbit and ran it one solid mile. Rabbit jumped down and cried just like a child. You look hungry, come and have some lunch with me. Hey, you look hungry, come and have some lunch with me. Well, I'm tired of these women chasing after me. Hitch me to a wagon and drag me like a mule. Hitch me to a wagon and drag me like a mule. Hitch me to a wagon, cause I ain't nobody's fool. Hey, ha, 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 yeah. Blues jumped the rabbit and ran it one solid mile. Sad blues jumped the rabbit and ran it one solid mile. Rabbit jumped down and cried. Oh, look here. You don't hear me. Yeah, let me hear you. I said he cried. Oh, little rabbit. Like a child.
You're listening to the Blues Break on WBGO, and we're celebrating Blind Lemon Jefferson, as is Akeem Babatunde. He's playing Blind Lemon in Lonesome Blues. It's at the York Theater Company. That's a just around that Citicorp Center in St. Peter's at 54th and Lex. There's so much happening down at the York Theater through the years, musicals and Mufti and then some. This show is a show that played there earlier, right? It was at the York for a while, some years ago, right?
Well, not this show.
This show. Yeah, I'm saying it's mutated over the years. There were many characters, many actors.
Oh, yeah. There were six characters in one version of our celebration of Blind Lemon. And then in another version, which August Wilson himself saw, we had 16 characters. And he actually gave us a quote from that production. And he gave us permission to use it. And it was that he was trying to write a play about Blind Lemon himself, but he couldn't find enough information. So what he told us, he said, Blind Lemon was the voice of Black America at that time. And we use it. We use that quote.
He ended up writing about Ma Rainey. He found out there was much more about Ma Rainey.
Yeah, yeah.
Which takes place, that play, in a recording studio. And
yeah.
And Lemon would be, you know, trained up to Chicago to record. And there's a great scene where you're just getting angry about how many takes do
That's
you
right.
want.
That's right.
But every take was different. That was the twist, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's amazing the number of recordings that Blind Lemon made
in
such a short time. He died at 36. He made 80 recordings, but now there's actually been more that have been uncovered. Those second takes is probably up to 110 now that are known.
And then this is, we're talking this, you know, in the teens and 20s, certainly in the 20s when the blues business, when the records were starting to be made and sold, and he made money, right?
You have to think that he, you know, but in 1929, the year of the stock market crash, that he had $1,500 in the bank, that he owned two automobiles, had an apartment in Chicago and a house in Texas. Is extraordinary.
Yeah, so yes, of course, he sure did make money. And $1,500 was a lot of money in those days.
Oh, that was real money, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. When he went back to Dallas, though, did he play gigs at places, or did he still go on his corner?
He went back to his corner, but I think he went all over. I think he just didn't stay in Texas. I mean, there were in doing this research, and partly what's propelled us to keep wanting to know more about him is that more comes forward. It's all anecdotal. There's very little written information. What we know the most about Blind Lemon is through what Leadbelly said about him in 1947 when he recorded with Frederick Ramsey, the great jazz producer, during his last sessions. And he talked tangibly about Blind Lemon being the biggest influence upon him of any musician.
There used to be a circuit also in Texas and probably still is. I think it still is. Marcia Ball was just here recently, and she plays on that circuit from time to time. But way back when, the circuit was wherever you were, if like Mississippi or Louisiana, you came to Chicago. Chicago is where all the circuits came together and where he went up and recorded. And I wondered, how did he get the money? Did they give him cash? Do you know any of that?
Well, I think they gave him cash. I mean, that was generally the way in which it was done. You know, you got paid by the song, by the session, and it was usually cash. What's another interesting detail, and it's contained within our show, is that the person who discovered him, or the recording scout for Paramount, was Mayo Williams, who was one of the first African-Americans to work as an executive in a white-owned company in the 1920s. So he had this great sensitivity to his music.
And they were selling 78s, basically, and they'd sell, there were no record stores, they would be at the grocery store, right?
Well, actually, Blind Lemon stood in front of R.T. Ashford's Shine Parlor. And at one of our productions years ago in Dallas, some people came, and there were these two women, and they came up to us afterwards and said, R.T. Ashford was our grandfather. We couldn't believe that
we
could
not.
And so they actually had a written account that had been written by their mother about her father, R.T. Ashford. Well, R.T. Ashford was an amazing person. He had a shine parlor because...
And what is it? Explain what a shine parlor is.
Well, in Dallas, Central Avenue is where the black businesses were. Elm Street were the white businesses. Central Avenue was unpaved. So if you were black and you were going downtown Dallas, you wanted to get your shoes shined before walking on that street. The vagrancy laws, the racism was terrible in Dallas in the 1920s. In addition to having seven chairs where people could get their shoes shined, Ashford also sold records. And he had three listening booths, which was just remarkable to hear about that. I'd never heard of anything like it. So they were selling these 78s for between 50 and 75 cents a piece in the 1920s. And so Blind Lemon stood on the corner. He stood in front of the shop, and Ashford let him play for tips. And there was a young man, Sammy Price, who went on to be a great jazz pianist, who said to Ashford, "You've got to, you know, right off to Paramount Records, see if you can get Blind Lemon recorded." And that's how it came to be. But it was amazing to really learn about Ashford. Ashford, after he left Dallas years later, after Blind Lemon died, became a black Muslim and went to San Francisco. And there's photographs of Ashford as an old man with Malcolm X.
Wow. When you look back... You wonder, you see that one photograph, because there's just the one photograph of Blind Lemon Jefferson, and he's wearing glasses. And so you assume that, oh, maybe he could actually see some, but he couldn't really.
Well, it's a testament to his pride, maybe, you know, the fact that I have glasses even though I can't see. You know, don't discard me, you know, on some symbolic level. That was always amazing to me.
It was a manipulated photo, though. If you look closely at it, part of it is drawn in. The glasses seem to be real.
Mm-hmm.
Another woman who came forth after seeing an early production of this show, her relatives had a tailor shop in Deep Ellum. And she was convinced that Blind Lemon had that suit made in Dallas. Because really, it was the mix of the black and the white worlds that came together, but more specifically, it was the world of the Eastern European Jews who had the pawn shops, who were the bankers for African Americans who couldn't go to white-owned banks. the Jewish immigrants loaned money. They sold clothes. It was a good exchange that happened between the Jews and the blacks in that part of Dallas.
Lemon's records sold to a white audience, right?
They did early on, because Dallas was also the crucible for early Western swing. The Lycrest Doughboys, Milton Brown, Bob Wills, Roy Newman and his boys. In the 1930s, at 508 Park in Dallas, Robert Johnson did his last sessions. And Robert Johnson, much of what he was playing was also influenced by Lemon. Robert Johnson was unknown at the time he was recorded. Blind Lemon was a giant.
Yeah, that is a difference, because somebody at the talkback on Saturday was saying that Eric Clapton claims that he created all this music. And Eric Clapton is the first one to tell you, no, I got this from Robert Johnson, from Blind Lemon, from all of these masters of this music. And those are the cats you should be listening to.
It is interesting, though. I mean, even David Weiss, our guitarist, was talking the other day about it was really the British rock and rollers that saved blues in a way from extinction, because it had vanished. It didn't really have an African American audience in the United States, and it was in the 60s that Clapton and the Rolling Stones and others started digging into these 78s and wanting to do covers of this music, but they also wanted to bring in attention and honor and celebrate the musicians who had never gotten their due.
Yeah.
B.B. King and Muddy Waters both said that if it were not for all those British kids wanting to play their music, nobody ever would have wanted to hear them play their music, Muddy and B.B.
And it's a testament to what they're saying, because when we first took an aspect of this show to Paris, I tell you, the response was unbelievable. We had about 5 or 6 encores, and I've never heard a sound like that in a theater, with people banging the floor, hitting chairs, begging us to come out and bow and do another number. They were moved and touched by that music.
So that the play became a concert.
It did in its own way.
Yeah.
And part of the genesis of this one-person show was once again propelled by the response that we got in Paris. There was a show that I wrote called Texas and Paris that Akeen directed, and we were in Paris for that production, and people remembered Akeen as Blind Lemon, and they said, "What happened to Blind Lemon? What happened to Blind Lemon?" And it really made us think that Akeen could do this himself. He knew all the songs, the men, the women, the period. He has embodied this in such a major way, and in all the other shows, he was the one who taught the songs. He doesn't read music. He teaches the music, and he's carried them with him. Writing with Akeen is an amazing experience, because he doesn't only write, he sings, he performs, he acts. I'm always enchanted every time I'm with this man.
I appreciate that, but I will tell you that it was not my doing, because even when we did the show and I ended up inheriting the role of Blind Lemon, I inherited that role. David Peaston, a wonderful Grammy Award-winning artist, and he's no longer with us, was Blind Lemon, and he had gotten ill at the time. And we searched for someone to play Blind Lemon, and Alan and our lawyer at the time said, "We're going in 4 days to Paris, and you're going to do Blind Lemon." And I said, "Oh, no, I'm not." They said, "Oh, yes, you are. You should have been doing it all along." Case in point, we got an opportunity in Austin last year to do the show again, the Blind Lemon Blues show. And it would have been too much to pull that show together. So Alan said, "We should do it as a one-man show." And again, I was kicking and screaming and said, "No, I do not want to do a new one-man show. That's a lot of work." We did it anyway in Austin. And then when we did it, Jim Morgan at the York Theater saw a tape of it, and that's why we're here. And then we're doing it at the Undermain Theater next year with the director who's directing it. So, you know, it has a life of its own, and maybe Lemon is blessing me by saying, "No, you're going to play me."
We've been doing this so long. My wife, Kalita Doolin, is a great champion this show. And my son has grown up listening to it. It's like my son came last night to the show and said, "I can hear every single change that you've made and how it's developed and what you've added, because he knows every one of these songs too. He's now a hip hop producer in New York, but he loves this music.
Well, here's some of this music. Here's Akin Babatunde as a Blind Lemon.
I feel so disgusted, so low down in mind. Said I'm blue and disgusted, so low down in mind. I ain't got no money, and my honey's so unkind.
You're listening to The Blues Break on WBGO. Michael Bourne with you, and I am joined by Akin Babatunde, who's playing Blind Lemon Jefferson in a show called Lonesome Blues. It's now at the York Theater. We're together also with the co-author of the play, Alan Governor, and the long Lonesome Blues is what we were talking about. I was talking about before. It's the opening phrase is 16 and a half bars.
With that great line, when the blues come to Texas, loping like a mule.
But so many things show up in there, like earlier in that song about, you know, I'm bad like Jesse James. Wait a minute, isn't that a John Lee Hooker song? No, Blind Lemon. Yeah. It goes back again and again to Blind Lemon. So much of this, when you listen to this collection I was playing, you hear, really, where everything comes from.
Yeah.
When you were playing him, I mean, do you ever improvise in this show?
I honestly have listened to his voice, but I'm an actor. You know, we as actors, we do a lot of research. So things, you do a research on the character. So I had to listen to his voice and then my voice mixed with his. So I never improvise. It is a scripted show. But musically, sometimes something will hit me differently. But I tell you, just listening to it, I was like, oh, my God, I sound like that sometimes. You know, I was surprised how much his spirit is going into me, and I'm starting to sound like those moans and things that he does. It's absolutely amazing. You know, we have had an amazing journey with this 20-year collaboration and recognition of this figure. And there have been so many people along the way. Like, there's a Tony Award winner, Lilias White, who did one version of our show. Yarbrough and Peoples, a Grammy-nominated group. David Peaston, Liz Michael is in a Eve Enslow play that's running now, Fruitology. She was in a version. Walter Fauntleroy is a soap opera actor and a film actor in L.A. now. So it's like Lemon has even touched their lives.
And then there are the musicologists. The earliest lead sheets for the guitar work was done by David Evans, who's a scholar of Mississippi Delta blues, who had never really paid as much attention to Blind Lemon. And once he got into it, he was amazed.
Yeah.
We ended up doing a special issue of the Journal of Black Music Research devoted to Blind Lemon and his guitar playing and his lyrics and the myth surrounding his life and death. And then there were others. There was an Italian translator, Luigi Mangi, who transcribed the lyrics. Luigi had an ear for listening to black English, particularly as it was articulated by Blind Lemon. These are not easy lyrics to transcribe.
Because he's going every which way in what he's singing. You get this real feeling of whimsy in like, oh, I'm going to do this now. I'm going to tell this story now.
And
the same thing with the guitar. Well, wait a minute. I'm going to stop time here. And then now I'm going to play 8 and a half bars.
In one of our sessions, in one of our rehearsals, David was playing a song, and he says, well, you know, you got to keep this, keep this. I said, David, I don't know if I'm going to go there. You just play your melody, and I'll just go wherever it takes me because I can't stay with it. And we just started laughing.
It's curious, also, what you've been talking about, when you look at the list of musical numbers in the show, in the program, the show that's playing at the York Theater, is that you'll have the list and you have song, but you'll also credit, okay, now this is where we tell the story of this, and oh no wait, this is from this, and that's all pieces of it. It's all pieced together from songs and these memories that you have recreated.
Yeah,
it's an amazing songbook. You know, he's one of the great masters of American music, and it just gives us this very deep joy to be able to bring it to life.
Mm-hmm.
And to remind everybody about him, because I think some ways
yes.
he's been forgotten.
He has. He has been forgotten. He's never really quite gotten his due. And we keep staying with it because we keep thinking about it. There's something about Blind Lemon that doesn't let go of us.
Yes, it really doesn't. I mean, because we thought we were done with it. And in one of our earlier versions, we actually visited the grave of Blind Lemon in where he's buried. And rehearsed on the grave, gave him a little libation, rehearsed on his grave. So maybe he's consistently saying, hey, thank you for that. I'm going to be alive through you guys.
Well, back even before I knew Akeen, right. I went to the grave of Blind Lemon. It was then just an unmarked concrete slab.
Yes.
And I met someone, Quince Cox, who, as it turned out, was a childhood friend of Blind Lemon. And Quince and his friend, Hobart, who both knew Blind Lemon, lived to be 101 and 99 years old. And I continued to know them, and every time I'd go to Wortham, I'd find someone else that they would say, oh, go see Mamie, go see Miss Sarah, go see Miss Sarah's daughter. And there'd be little bits and pieces that we were able to draw upon. There's also a new book of mine called The Blues Come to Texas that's publishing in what was at a time considered a holy grail of blues books. It was a manuscript done by Paul Oliver and Mac McCormick, and it was never published. It was started in 1959, and Paul asked me to get involved in this. It's being published as a kind of historical artifact, but in that book, there was new information. Mac McCormick had interviewed Blind Lemon's younger sister. Little bits and pieces of details that filtered their way into our creative process.
And it goes on, and you. I would think, from what I've read about Blind Lemon, that he would have enjoyed your performance and enjoyed the fact that there is a show about him.
Yeah.
He was a very showy fellow.
Yes,
you know, we talked about, you know, he wore glasses even though he was blind, but he wore bright colors. He was famous for the way he dressed, and it was like, you know, I can't see what I'm wearing, but you can. You know. And wonderful show. And again, Alan Governor and Akeen Babatunde is playing at the York Theater through July 1st, and good to be talking about it. Let's have one more thing. It ends, the inevitable ending is going to have to be, you know, the song about, you know, keep my grave kept clean. But here's one more taste of Akeen Babatunde as Blind Lemon Jefferson.
Where shall I be when the first trumpet sounds? Where shall I be when it sounds so loud? Sounds so loud that it raises the dead. Where shall I be? Ooh, look over yonder. What's that I see? Where shall I be? A band of angels coming for me. Where shall I be?
thank you for coming by.
Thank you.
Akeem Babatunde is playing Blind Lemon Jefferson and Alan Governor. They wrote the show, and you've been working on this show forever, and it comes down to this. It's been distilled, in a way, down into this extraordinary one man, or actually two men, because David Weiss is playing the guitar, and it's playing at the York Theater through the 1st of July.